welcome to another episode of Three Wise DMs, the podcast where three dungeon masters who've been doing this for way too long talk about all the things we do to try to make our games as good as they can be.
Hi, I'm Tony.
I'm Chris.
This is the end. Beautiful friend, the end. This is the end. Under him, the end. Yeah. I half mumbled that last part because sometimes he was just intoxicatingly.
It was some
he was in a bathtub with a beard and a big old belly. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Three Wise DMs. This is the Rock and Roll DM, DM Dave. Obviously, that was The End by The Doors, the best psychedelic band of that era, bar none. Like, no other band was good that was, like, psychedelic like they were. The End. I challenge you to try to prove me wrong. You can't.
So he feels very strongly about keyboards.
Yeah,
They had a very great blues sensibility.
They were an awesome bar band who was also like super out there and just trippy, right? Mm. Yeah, they weren't singing incense and peppermints and all this shit. So The End. So it's not really The End, but we have kind of reached a point where we feel, the Three Wise DMs feel like we have a solid foundation for this ongoing, it's not even an experiment anymore. It happened now. We have a solid foundation for our crowdsourced collaborative campaign setting known as Boomtown. So tonight, we are going to kind of do an overview of the changes we've made, the general campaign setting, stuff like that, just for anyone who might need to catch up or has listened to us ramble for probably upwards of 8 hours plus on Boomtown, I want to say, because it's been a lot of episodes and they all roll in about 45 minutes plus. So, you know, just do the math, peeps. So anyway, I mean, let's just start out. I'm just going to start it out here by reintroducing everyone to the world of Boomtown. So we have this kind of post-apocalyptic, old west sci-fi steampunk kind of flavor, right? We kind of started with the idea of Tombstone and Tombstone in D&D. Some sort of great catastrophe happened so long ago. No one remembers. It destroyed whatever the previous civilization was, or at least we feel it has. But the recent discovery of ancient technologies in the wastes that have magical properties has fueled a gold rush. And then there is this construction of these hastily built boom towns where courageous explorers venture out into the wastes in search of money and power and fame and fortune. So that's where we start. So let's get a move on here, guys. What did we think?
So what I like about this is it's got an entirely different feel than pretty much any 5e environment I've had the pleasure of playing in thus far. It's definitely different at from the beginning of your story to like when it actually kicks off your environment. It's more so in the future. It depends on different things are important because of that, and your goals are different. And honestly, I think that's pretty refreshing.
No, absolutely. And I think one of the things that really stood out is early on, I identified the idea of how technology was going to somehow play, like found technology was going to play a big part in this. And I think we started with the Tombstone idea. We matched that and it really started to help to flourish having that idea that we're going to use that found technology to be the basis for a lot of what's happening in the world, whether it's driving the world forward, it's what people are doing and stuff like that. So I think it gives it a really nice, it gives the world a nice cohesiveness, is that there's a purpose for it, right? It's not just a world that's out there. It's a world for a D&D adventure, right? It's ripe with possibilities for it. So,
yeah, and Tony, I think that you hit the nail on the head with that, is that there is no, especially official campaign setting, that is Western, Weird West flavored, right? There are some third-party product, obviously, just like ours will be. But and I remember when we first started this and we were doing a lot of stuff on social media, people were talking about, like, you know, we would ask questions. What do you think this should be called? What do you guys think about this or that? And a lot of people would respond like, why don't you just play Deadlands? Or why don't you just play like another RPG? And like, I appreciate the sentiment, if not the douchey way in which it's like given. But the fact of the matter is that 5e and D&D is currently the most popular RPG. Look, we play Call of Cthulhu. I play Draw Steel. We've played Pathfinder. We play Marvel Superheroes, the old TSR system. We play a lot of different systems. Tony's played Rifts and Palladium, right? We've played lots of systems. Avatar, the role-playing game, right? But that's... Right, and that's fun, but like 5e is the most easily accessible for a lot of people because we already know kind of how it runs, right? We don't have to think about a lot of things or learn that system. So this is an easy way to have this kind of Weird West, sci-fi, D&D meets Tombstone thing and still not have to draw it out of whole cloth, right?
No, that's true. And then it allows you to draw on other backgrounds for inspiration. So this time we're not doing Lord of the Rings, but perhaps we're doing Firefly, something like that. It's unusual. So you're going, instead of dungeon crawling per se, you're exploring this post-apocalyptic world where everything is destroyed, it's dangerous, and there are secrets out there. And we have different elements where you're constantly interacting with the economy now. You're trying to gain this technology. There'll be forces who don't want you to have the technology. So, and yes, there is a bit of a learning curve to it. We're doing things differently, but it's not as steep as if we were starting from scratch and reinventing hit points.
No, and I think it's a really good world for adventure. Right. Very often there's things, it's the, you know, in Dragonlance, I'm going to encounter cool old structures from the catastrophe and stuff like that. But in this thing, like, you could encounter that. I could encounter New York City. I could encounter some weird alien thing like it. I think the concept of the wastelands, and especially with the idea of a boomtown being this remote location, that there's still some noise from the state, but you're effectively living in your own little like world there, right? Heading out to the wastelands, you could find almost anything. I mean, I think it's like we are already kicking around ideas about different things that we can have people go out there and find or bring back and stuff like that, different adventures out there. And I think this setting, especially post-apocalyptic and having it somewhat gray about exactly what happens, gives people running it the ability to be able to kind of sit it anywhere you want to. It could be epic fantasy if that's really where you want to go, but it also can be really straight old west kind of things there and those kind of things. So I think it offers a lot of possibilities the way that we sort of constructed it.
Yeah, and we kind of made a mention now of, like, you know, we have this great catastrophe and like this, the previous civilization is gone, but like what has come in its place, and kind of where we started was this idea of, we originally started talking about this shadowy conglomerate, this corporation on the East Coast, right? That's like, you know, politicking and all of this, trying to get all this power. But what we came up with finally was what we're calling the Trivium. So it's this totalitarian regime that's to the east of Boomtown. So we could say East Coast. I'm thinking Tombstone is out in Arizona, and we're thinking like the East Coast, like D.C., right? But and then we named it the Trivium. That actually came from some listeners on social media. But we broke it up into the three arms. We have the Divine State, which is like the theocratic arm. We have the Inquisition, the military arm, and the Guild, which is this business arm. And for me, I'll just start off and throw it to you guys. But like, one of the things that was, it was fun because it was so shocking at first. So we're doing this whole Weird West sci-fi D&D meets Tombstone thing. And we're talking about, okay, like we have, and we'll get into like some of the things about the prophets and stuff in a little bit. But we're talking about like this idea of like, do we have gods in this world? Do we have divine magic? Do we have clerics, right? And Tony drops this level of Bible lore of like seven gods and the domains. And like, I was thrown by it. But then as I came back to it, I went, oh, that's a really cool thing, because it had this very decidedly Greek and Roman kind of vibe to it, right? Even like the Trivium and this, like the Divine State, the Inquisition, the Guild. And it's like, this is cool because now we have this kind of Hellenistic, Romanesque thing that you can do medieval fantasy with the East Coast. But then you also have this cool out in the West, it's turned into Wyatt Earp, you know? So Tony, kind of go a little bit into that.
So the religion structure out in the East is definitely more structured. We have seven deities out there, and those deities, at least that we're aware of, don't provide magical powers to their followers. On the other hand, though, out West, there it's more of a Native American feel to it, where you've got the raven, who is the principal good god, the coyote, who is the trickster, and then there is a trinity of three different evil deities, all of which very well may provide magic or providing magic to their followers. So right there, that's vastly different, and you know, opens up a opportunity for a conflict between these forces. Something I wanted to really fast touch back to both of what you said. What I like about this, too, is the key word is it's a remote location. Something that always kind of bothered me about playing Greyhawk was, hey, you're in a city with a wizard's college, an army, flying ships. Call the level one heroes. You guys have to get in here and save the day. Like that just that
not more than Kanan. No, he's busy. You got to get Steve, who just dropped his mop.
Morden Kane's like, you go get one of the rookies. I don't got time for this.
Yeah, Bigby's like, I'm really busy, and Rary's on vacation, and you know, Tensor's out to lunch. Call in the D team because they got this. But in this place with less authority and presence like that, and the law is dipping around, and the church is dipping around and feeling around, this really gives a fresh party an opportunity to grow, explore, and not have that floating over their heads.
Yeah, no, and I think the religion angle, obviously the seven gods for the divine state, but the idea that they themselves are somewhat empty gods, they're symbolic of whatever that is that they're doing. And so that there's this struggle where they banned other religions, right? Because they fear the power that's coming through that, that these people could be influenced by that. And I think that creates something cool that you don't necessarily have. You have it a little bit in some adventures when they make a specific thing, but it creates a different sort of angle for people like clerics or something in this, is that generally you're going to be a cleric of a god who is a legal god, right, by the eyes of the divine state. So it creates a level of intrigue and a hook that as a DM you could lean into if you have a cleric in the party, a preacher, like later on we'll talk about like what we did with the names, but where it creates this feeling where, you know, there's people there, they're preachers that are talking about those seven gods, but then there are people that are coming in from the wastes and people that are erecting small churches in there that are talking about the raven and other things like that. And they're constantly at war with the divine state, but the remoteness of it allows them to exist enough that they could impact the area. So I think it's really cool.
Yeah. So like the Trivium, this regime to the east, their entire point is gaining this magic tech has been discovered and they want it. So they're collecting it. They may or may not even realize that there's divine magic coming back into the world either. Like I'm thinking, like Chris, you mentioned Dragonlance, like in a very similar fashion, right? And it really gives a lot of agency to players who maybe want to play with that in the cleric class that we're going to talk about later. But this idea that like they're just gathering the tech, like, and the way in which they're doing that is the name of the setting, which are these boom towns, right? Now we sent it out there and we had people vote on what it is. So like, as we had said several episodes ago, Boomtown 42, by the way, so it's not even Boomtown number one. So the Trivium numbers them, and your starter adventure will probably be happening in Boomtown number 42, that is named colloquially by the residents as Gallows Springs. And these are the ways in which the Trivium, so the Divine State, the Inquisition, and the Guild are gathering all of this tech, very prospector style, very Boomtown style, gathering it up and delivering it back east to the Trivium for them to collect and analyze and utilize and gain powerful from. So this is kind of the start, as you guys were saying, of the Boomtowns, of Gallows Springs.
So, yeah, you have this church versus the technology dynamic here, but since the church isn't in power because they have divine energies, they have all this tech, these relics that they've accumulated, and they're out to collect these. Just real fast, town number 42 does feel a little bit like Fallout. Like that's from Vault 42. Like I could totally see that.
Blame Doug Adams. Like it was just, it's for number 42. I put 42 into everything I can. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well placed. Well played.
Yeah, and I think but the cool thing too is inside of the Boomtowns, right? Obviously, you have we created Lowtown and Hightown, as you would have, right? And the idea is Lowtown is where the action happens, is where the prospectors are bringing in whatever they're finding out there. They're trading it into the state-run guild member there, right? Because they have to turn it in. They're also probably pocketing it. They're going around the side of the building and selling some of it to illegal people. They're setting up the whole black market there. And I think that's really cool. And then you have the Hightown part where it's the rich folks where they would live in a sort of a different sort of bubble there, and they would start to have that access to tech where they would have that weird sort of relationship where they're sort of down on everybody and with the divine state, but at the same time receiving tech from them and enhancing themselves and stuff like that. I think it creates a cool dynamic. And it's a cool place to start, too, is like you would start in Lowtown, but it's even inside of Gallo Springs, like one of the first things you'd want to do is bring them to Hightown, right? Because that would be a cool change of pace from wherever you're doing there. And then you're going there and there's, you know, magic trains. Probably not magic trains yet. That's probably a bad thing. But like they have access to stuff that would seem even more magical to the folks that are all in the dust inside of Lowtown.
Yeah. And I mean, even speaking of like Lowtown and Hightown, which is very Tombstone as well, by the way, they definitely had that. They used to call it Hop Town, where all of the Chinese immigrants were down literally on the other end of the street, you know. But I wouldn't even be again. And that's, again, some of the fun stuff with this is that depending on who's running the game, they can, and who's playing in it, I wouldn't be against having someone who wants to maybe say they have like a noble background or something like that, where maybe they are in Hightown. Now, that doesn't mean that they have access to all of the, well, I come in with, you know, seven things of magic gear.
A flying car, yes.
Right. But it does allow for a level of like, what else is happening? You know, where is the adventure here? One of the things that like I was really pushing for, and we've talked about, because we've always talked about on the show many times about the economy of D&D, right? You go out and you enter dungeons and you kill monsters and you get loot. And what is all of this loot for, right? It's to purchase things, right? But there's only so much that I can ever purchase, right? There's only so much that, you know, and I go defeat a dragon and now I have this horde. Like, I've just destroyed any economy that's out there, right? Like, I can, like, you know, I can end kingdoms with the level of riches I've gained. So we really pushed for some level of like economy or resources, and we had been throwing around ideas of like in Call of Cthulhu, you had like your standard of living that you could in essence just roll with. In Marvel Superheroes by TSR, you have the resources system, which allows you like you're at a certain level. One of the things we kind of settled on, though, was the idea of an upkeep fee, right? So that every month, you got to pay the rent, right? Now, this would, in essence, so instead of you having to pay at the tavern, here's your 4 silver pieces, and then I got to pay for my tenement, and then I have to pay my horse fee, and then I have to, right, all of these things. We just said, okay, well, what if you had a standard of living that just every month you have to come up with your nut? This is it, right? And we broke it out into something like Hardscrabble, Common, and Flush, and that would, in essence, be 25 gold pieces, 50 gold pieces, or 100 gold pieces. And that's each month. So it requires you to put money towards these things that take it away from you purchasing other stuff. Along with that, we started to work into the ideas of ammunition that you're going to have to be purchasing, right? Because we'll get into this with firearms and stuff in a little bit. But you're going to have to be constantly either finding, purchasing, or stealing ammunition. And then when we get into some of the spellcasting idea, our idea of the components of the spells that kind of power these pieces of tech, and how do you get these? Again, all ways in which you have to manage your resources and not just, I have 60 gold pieces on my sheet for the next, you know, five levels, and I never actually have to touch into it, and I never have to actually touch into how many torches or rations I'm carrying, right?
Oh, that's good stuff. We've all had a character who's had iron rations on their character sheet, which was never replaced, you know, for 15 sessions. But what's
yeah, like, I know that they're meant for, like, travel, but, like, how long do they last, right? Like, at what point do they ever actually go bad, you know?
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, I like to believe, you know, in theory that it's used, replenished. You know, some people really love that meticulous counting, and, you know, some people absolutely don't. To kind of touch on something Chris was just talking about, the magic in this world is going to be rare. But here it is. It is, although uncommon now, in our boomtown. This is where these things exist. This is what draws people out there. If there's magic, it's church secrets. They're not. You're not going to walk by a giant magic mega TV and see the Supreme Leader talking. It's going to be nothing like that. So this, that opens up a whole opportunity for someone to get access to something that would not even be something you even come across whatsoever. But yeah, ammo, spell components, these are things that you are going to forever be sinking money into. It just, you would, as a gunslinger, you'd always be buying bullets. As a wizard, you're getting things to charge your spells, all those things. I think the money drops need to be subsequently different. For example, you know, if I kill a bandit leader and he drops 2,300 gold, that's a lot of friggin' shells. Okay, like, that's a lot of rent. That's a lot of shells. I mean, I'm thinking that has to be restructured accordingly, is my point.
I think there's something to that. I think a little bit to Dave's point is that it will focus it. It's like, I can't tell you, number one, we hate shopping. Right. Like, I think just as a general,
well, you got me there,
like, we don't do a whole lot of shopping trips whenever we're in any of our campaigns to spend. And so you end up with large amounts of cash. And every time, you know, there's sometimes we just start giving away cash. Right. Because, like, well, what are you going to do with it? And there's like it. And I think when you start to create the idea of the upkeep fee, you start to create the idea of material components and stuff like that. It's not enough to it's like. At first level, it's going to be tough, like you're going through your job stuff. By the time you're fifth level, sixth level, it's not a thing. I have spending cash on me, but I think the way we combat it too is that all it's going to do is really focus you down, and there's going to be other things you can buy. There's going to be tech that you're going to want to get. You'll probably be getting it illegally, right, off of somebody, the side of somebody's thing there. But I think it just helps to solidify. And then what I have left from that 2,300 is now what I can spend towards something cool that, like, I know that old man Johnson has a particle accelerator in his barn that he's just, like, he's looking to cut with. And he wants it for this. And I think I can get him down enough that I think I could sell it this way. So I think it'll make money matter a little bit more, because right now it's just sort of, I think to Dave's point, you just kind of keep adding it to your sheet, right? We just like, all right, we split it and everybody add it to their sheet, but we don't ever really use it except for esoteric things occasionally, right? Or you want to give 10 gold to the, when you finally do go out to the pub, you know, you throw a gold piece down for the bartender because you're flush. I have like 60,000 gold because I killed a dragon.
And that's kind of the point too, right? Is that you're literally talking about, like, you know, like somebody in the last, in another, one of our previous sessions, they like threw like 2 gold on the bar for something. And like, that's like, so that's like 2 years of salary.
Yeah.
Like, and because it's so $100 alien, right. It's so alien to us that it's like, you know, like no one's constantly walking around with a chest full of 1,000 gold pieces. Like this is, you know, anyway, but, that's just how you structure your game. Right. But, with that, with the resources, but like I said, like making it to have a reason that, and it doesn't become constant accounting for everything, but there is a level of like, you got to pay your way, you know, and that matters. And just
a reason,
like,
to adventure. It's a reason to adventure as much as anything else. You got a job. This is my job. I do this stupid prospecting thing. This is super dangerous.
I go back to our, when we did the Iron Chapter game with DM Lenny running it, where he took us through Lost Mines of Phandelver, and we did the whole mercenary Iron Chapter idea where we had to like build our own, like, local, in essence, of the Iron Chapter, right? Mercenaries for Heroes for Hire, right? And, like, we were very focused on how much gold, because we're like, we want to buy a keep. We got to upkeep it. We got to, you know, and then you can get into stuff. I was really impressed by what, like, Matt Colville's team did with, like, Kingdoms and Warfare and Strongholds and Followers, where it's like, there's a lot of these things that are, like, very old-school D&D, like having your own keep and stuff. But, like, that costs money, you know? And there is something to be said about a mechanic that allows for that. But just to kind of jump forward with some of the things that we kind of talked about, some of the things you would buy would be ammunition, because in our Weird West setting of Boomtown, firearms are the thing. I mean, I'm still not against the maybe cool magic sword that, like, can cast shield and stop a bullet, maybe, but, like, people are going to be slinging guns, right? So we have guns here. I broke them out here just so we could talk about it tonight, but we have just the general four that that are just normally in 5e. You got your pistol, your revolver, your rifle, and your shotgun, which do some significant damage. So let's start talking about some of the things we ran into with having firearms be the weapon of choice in this world.
So my last thought on that topic is that we can play with the upkeep numbers. Like, that's not, you know, the absolute end all be all.
Different boom towns have different standards of living and all kinds of stuff. Oh, yeah.
So just looking at these, the numbers here for these firearms, I have to tell you, if you're one of those players who are like, oh, nobody dies in 5e, well, hold my beer, because I have to tell you, like, the base guns do 2d8 and 2d10. So guns are shockingly deadly. They're no one's firing boxing glove arrows. If you get shot at level 1, 2, 3, you could be blown away, especially on a crit, and that could be the end of you. But what's interesting about this is it adds a different dynamic to how you're going to approach problems. There's so many times in D&D where I'm just like, let's go get those guys. I've got 88 hit points. Right? There's really the tension level.
We're going to go beat them up. Yeah.
Right? I've got amazing body armor. Let's just go. Let's go kick their ass. And that's not present here. You're dangerous. You're a gunslinger. You're an engineer. You know, you are someone with some talent, but you can be shot and killed. And that kind of, to me, harkens back to that whole Call of Cthulhu vibe, where I had a character who was very handy with guns, and he got shot and dropped. I mean, ask anybody. I had frequent flyer miles in the hospital.
Elephant gun.
Oh. Oh, my God. That was so uncalled for.
Now, I think it's a point, but I think a lot like the resources, too, it scales. So I think what it does is it makes the first couple levels a lot more Call of Cthulhu-like, where you are definitely not charging in. All right, I'm gonna duel this guy, right? I'm whipping out my shotgun. I'm gonna fire a thing. Like, it's gonna force you to have to be much more role playing, stealth, ingenious at those levels and stuff like that. Plans. But I think you could also, in many ways, you would play the bad guys the same way. Is that there's gonna be a certain, like, when it gets to guns, it gets to serious. But you know, I think I think eventually it starts to think. By the time you're fifth level or sixth level, I can get plugged with a shotgun, right? Somehow, right? Like, I can take a shotgun blast at that level, and I'm still able to go. So I think it's like, just like the resources, it will enhance the fear and danger at the early levels, but eventually it'll always be dangerous, but I think it'll start to just become something that's part of the world there. But it is, like, you roll two gunslingers into the... like a gunslinger and like the guy who rides in on the horse behind him or something, like his sidekick, because you're probably going to need it. If you hit that rifle and the guy rolls out good, or like hits like a nat 20 on it, it's like, yeah, it's like permadeath there. So
yeah. And also, like Chris, you were saying, it scales, because like at fifth level too, like, you're not worried about the gunslinger in town. You're worried about what's out in the wastes that you just ran into, some kind of crazy beast or tech-based wizard or something, right? So obviously it scales just like in D&D. But with that, with the level of damage, you know, so we're talking about, I mean, the lowest damage with like a pistol is like a 1d10. That's still pretty heavily. That's still pretty hefty, right? Like that could drop somebody, right? Especially at level one. And then everything goes up from there. 2d8, 2d10, 15 foot spreads, right? Stuff like that.
These are just the base guns too.
Exactly, exactly. We haven't even gotten, like, I don't know, maybe howitzers are out there. Who the hell knows? But
or lasers. Lasers.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, as you level up, right, you find tech. But that led us, because you have, I'm thinking about, we just had an LOTR game this past weekend that Chris was running. And the Wizard Washburn, Scott, is playing a Dwarf Scholar. The scholar class in the Lord of the Rings 5e supplement, and his dex is like a 10, so he has a 0 modifier, and he can't really wear armor because he's a scholar, so his armor class is 10. So we are thinking about, like, okay, we're in Boomtown now. Everyone's carrying a firearm. I mean, like, I don't care who you are. You have proficiency with firearms if you live in a Boomtown, just like if you lived in a Western town, right? So we're like, okay, well, what happens with the guy that has a 12 armor class? Because we're not rolling out scale mail or plate leather or plate mail, or shield. A shield isn't going to stop a bullet, right? Things like that. So we started to play with some of how that might work. You know, we started talking about leather dusters and stuff, but then we started to get into some changes that we do where Tony had come up with our unarmored defense ideas. So Tony, kind of go into some of that we've been kicking around.
So generally speaking, yeah, like, you know, you weren't, like, we thought about, like, oh, you're wearing a duster, you're wearing a heavy duster, but I mean, like, what are we really talking about if it's not magical or tech infused, like a couple of points of armor class? I hate to say it, studded leather armor sucks. That is not going to save your life. Unless you have the agility of Muhammad Ali, do not trust your life wearing studded leather armor. That's my personal recommendation. But in this case, so you work with dex for your unarmed defense as, say, your static stat. It's going to be dex plus something else. And what we came back with is you could use either intelligence, wisdom, or constitution in conjunction, those bonuses with your starting point at 10 to equal your new current defense.
No, I think that it scales really nicely, and it addresses that thing, is that it's a Wild West steampunk thing. I don't want somebody trying to get themselves to plate armor. You're going to be wearing a duster, you're going to be riding a horse. It's a different kind of scenario. It's not going to be like that. It's kind of like Tomb of Annihilation, where it's going to be hot out there. You're not going to be wearing that. You're going to be wearing something different. But I think not only that, but then pairing that with the idea of how we made sure to highlight the misfire on the gun, an action to reload. So you have the idea, you can, it's like having a heavy crossbow. You can shoot your heavy crossbow, but you got to wind the thing up, right? Like, you can't, like, if you have two attacks, like, good luck. Like, I can fire once. I can't fire twice when I get my extra attack, right? Unless I have some kind of special ability that lets me do it. So I think between all those things, it makes it, there is enough wiggle room that you might die, but it's not as certain as when we first looked at the pistols and we're like, oh my God, like, there's like, people are going to die immediately. Like, there was like, it was pretty like, yeah, the 2d8s and the 2d10s. I think with the combination of those three things, it makes it a little bit easier that there's going to be misfires. There's going to be opportunities for you to do stuff because they're going to have to reload too, right? Like, and with the unarmored defense, it takes away from the idea where I'm constantly having to worry to make sure I have to worry about the next thing. It's something, it's just who I am in this thing, right? It's like, it doesn't require that I have to put something on. And I like that for all the classes. I always loved it for monks and stuff. I like the idea that it doesn't require me to have to keep on. I got to put a helmet on. I got to have a shield or something. It's just a score that allows me to adventure in the world, but not have to worry so much about all the things that I have to make sure that I'm putting on.
Yeah, I mean, I've said many times that, you know, make intelligence matter again in the world. So I was kind of bringing up the idea like, well, like, what if somebody was just really like, they were really wily, right? Like an old gunfighter in the West, like really wily, like they use their street smarts, you know, and their survival instinct. And like, that's now reflected with this idea where obviously your dexterity, because that's going to make you quicker on the draw, but then it pairs it with something like you're very intelligent, you're very wise and perceptive, you're like a little extra hardy, so you know you can take a grazed bullet type of wounds type of thing. And it just allows for that in this world, especially if somebody rolls, you know, if somebody draws a bead on you with a rifle and they're like, let's say like a bandit or rogue class, and they crit it out and they have sneak attack damage. There's not many people that are surviving that, right? Because if they get draw a bead with a rifle at 2d10 and it crits it and they have sneak attack, like you're good night, Gracie. That's max damage. you're gone. But at the same point, like, that's awesome. And, like, that's very heroic feeling, right? Like, that you've really done something epic. You know, you drew a bead and just blew them away. Wow. Like, it's very cinematic. At the same point, I was like, okay, and you guys mentioned this, let's make critical fails matter, too. And not critical fails to bring back the critical miss chart and to shoot your ally or something, but
versus shot me in the liver.
Yeah, when you are when you're using a gun, maybe sometimes it'll misfire. That natural one, it doesn't blow up in your hand, it doesn't shoot someone else, but now I have to spend time reloading all of those chambers, right? So that type of thing, it makes it a little more dynamic in that way, right? Just in the same way that a nat 20 would as well. With that, we also had changed up to reflect what the setting is. And we got a lot of these ideas kind of originally from the Lord of the Rings game that Chris is running, because the classes were very similar to the 5e classes, but they had some little different things. The skills were all the same as the 5e, but they had some things that changed that reflected Middle Earth. So we did something very similar with some of the skills in Boomtown as well.
Yeah, we moved over history to streetwise, arcana to tech, and religion to preaching, which all fits our environment more nicely. And I do like that there is a penalty if you roll a one, but it's not godforsakenly, like I just blew three fingers of my own hand off. Like,
it's not punishing. Yeah, it's not completely punitive, but it matters, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's punishing in the moment is like, crap, I didn't fire this round. But yeah, like, it's not like I need to go to occupational therapy now because I can't pick up anything because I lost three of my fingers. But no, I think it was indicative. Like, one of the things that the issues that we ran into early on was that there is no history for this world. The history is like whatever the divine state has like in their things, and then this the current history of the Boomtowns. So you wouldn't have somebody who was like, in the Third Age there was this, okay, because there is nothing about that. If there is, it's that false god sort of narrative stuff. And so the concept was, well, it's not about that. It's about, what do I know about how to get around now, right? Like, it's like I know who to talk to in town to find these things out. I know things about this place that I can facilitate things. So it works like history, but it removes the issue with history where we're like, there is no history. Like, if every time you make a history roll, like, well, you don't know because it was never written anywhere, you know? And like, likewise with the tech, arcana to tech, because we're not doing magic. So it was natural that arcana is such an important skill, right, especially for spellcasters, that it becomes tech because everything's driven by tech. And then, like Tony was saying, the preach. We'll get into the preacher class, but it's religion. So your chances are your cleric is not going to be a cleric of one of the false gods. You're going to be one of these frontier priests or something like that. And the way that they did a lot of that was in, you know, they'd stand up like a big top and do things like that. Like, it's preaching. It's going out there to the people and stuff like that. So we thought that made a better feeling for it, because there's not a whole lot to know about those religions because they're empty, right? So you're more like streetwise. It's more about a knowledge of what's happening now with this stuff and having a really good knowledge of the current state of things.
Yeah. And with that, with all of these things kind of put together, we decided on so we have our starter town of Gallows Springs, and then who would be in Gallows Springs. So we set out with the classic D&D party. So we took your fighter, thief, cleric, and wizard, and we started to turn them into flavor them in the same way, like I was saying with Middle Earth, flavoring a fighter into a Ranger of the North, right? It just has a flavor. It still plays very much like what you would expect a fighter to, but it has a sense. And we came up with the Gunslinger, the Bandit, the Prophet or Preacher. I actually kind of really like the idea of the being called a Preacher class too, and the Engineer, which is like our Wizard class.
Without breaking down all four of them once again and unpacking them, I feel what's nice about how these ones turned out was that we had both flavor plus relevant mechanics, so that their vibe fit the environment while they're still able to do things that are useful and make sense to what's going on here, where the Gunslinger has certain abilities that just flow. And yeah, we have a good party. Roland, John Maverick, Sister Mercy Kane, Solomon. You know, it's we're at the play at some point.
No, and I think they were cool, and I think we added some interesting things. I think to your point, Tony, like it was, we tried to make them a little bit more scenes or like area specific. So for example, like the rogue, like we made John Maverick a demolitions expert because like a rogue back then, I mean, they weren't like necessarily like ninjas. There was ninjas in the Old West, but it was going to be guys like bandits and guys blowing up a bridge and those kind of things. So trying to embrace that, obviously the Gunslinger was, I mean, that was low hanging fruit. I mean, that one is like, but just right away by doing that, I think it's creates an image in a person's mind. I'm creating a fighter. There's a lot of possibility of that. I'm not dissing that at all, but this is like, I'm creating a Gunslinger, right? It has a very cool vibe to it. And then we had even talked about the Prophet and stuff like that. There could be mechanics related to, because you're, in many ways, you're starting a religion or you're helping a person who's come from the waste to start a religion, that perhaps there's something about followers or something like that, where you could start to gain power by using your preach to, like, to get more people into the religion that you're bringing from the wastes there and stuff. So I think it creates very cool. It's cool when you're trying to think about what you want to be in the thing, because you're like, well, I could be a prophet, I could be a bandit, right? It sounds kind of cooler, especially when you've been, all you've heard is fighter, rogue, and cleric now for the past 20 years. So I think it was a really good thing. And I think the four-person party, I think it's the perfect party here. It has a little bit of everything, right? There's a reason why the fighter, thief, cleric, and wizard is the party of choice. So I think we've covered it really well.
Yeah, and like I feel like we flavored them in a way, because we kind of played into like what might their subclass look like and stuff. But like your gunslinger is going to, everyone is, like we said, everyone has firearm proficiency now. So it would be like in D&D if everyone had martial weapon proficiency. Like that's going to look a lot different, but the fighter is even better, right? Like they are able to fire off multiple rounds at a time. They are able to quickly reload if there's a misfire. They are able to, like, you know, dead eye, you know, take a shot like that. Obviously, John Maverick East with the demolitions thing, that's fun, because like there is no demolitions expert in the thing, except maybe Thorne's goblin that he had built.
Yes, Bixie. He was artificer class.
He was kind of an artillerist, yes. You know. But then where it really starts to shine are the two spellcasting classes. So with the prophet or preacher, the idea is that like you're bringing like very much in the vein of Dragonlance, like the gods are coming back to the world through these preachers or these prophets that are coming into town, i.e. the cleric. And we're playing into that by changing up the ways in which divine magic is played with. You know, it very much will have to do with the domain that you're in. You will have access to spells that other people wouldn't, depending on the domain of that. And you and the DM would be able to sit and work with, like, well, who is the deity that my prophet is bringing into this game, which I think is really fun. Instead of just, here's a list of gods, pick one, you know. And then with the engineer, because the whole basis of this campaign setting is tech. It started as tech. It was like, it's only ever going to be tech. And then we're like, well, that doesn't really work. What else can we do? But like tech is still like the central inciting incident of this entire setting. So the engineer is like the perfect example of that. But like we were talking about before, precast, everyone has the ability to pick up tech and start playing with it. Now, that tech is alien, it's unknown, it's powerful. So that could go poorly, right? So like what we were talking about is like anyone can interact with tech, but you're playing with nuclear weapons and you're just starting to push buttons. So that's where our technology skill comes into play. If you want to use it every time, you are having to roll a thing. And if you're rolling ones or you don't hit that, maybe wild magic happens. Maybe some catastrophic thing happens with it. But then as you're using the tech, you're starting to understand it. I'm thinking about the show Peacemaker, right? And he has his dimensional door technology thing that he knows, like, if I move this EQ stabilizer to this, like, setting, it opens the door. He doesn't know how it's working, but he can do it, right? And that's kind of that. And that's where, like, we could start playing with, like, attunement rules and things. But then your engineers and your artificers can not only understand this tech even better, but they can start to build that tech and retrofit that tech as you find it out in the wastes. But that is a pretty solid high overview of the solid foundation of the Boomtown campaign setting. So it's about time now for any final thoughts that we have as we move forward from here.
So just circling back, it's a new environment. It's got a new feel to it. You're going somewhere. You have different goals, different classes, different items. How things are going to be approached is going to be differently. It's not going to have that dungeon crawling feeling. It's more dangerous. There's radiation in the world. There's, you know, when you're playing D&D at low levels, like, what are you expecting your DM to do? You're going to throw out some kobolds or some goblins versus now you've got bandits with firearms. This is just going to be a completely different, fresh way to have a campaign. You know, I love a good dungeon crawl, but, you know, I will look forward to something like this when we actually bust this out and play it. I think it's going to be really good.
Yeah, no, I think that, to my point, I think it's really good. And I think even if dungeon crawls are your thing, I think there probably are dungeons somewhere out there in the wastes, right? I think the really cool thing is that it's like we keep being very unspecific about it. We keep calling it technology, right? It's tech this. So it's anything that you want it to be. It's any mulligan or whatever. Like, I need them to go grab this. A MacGuffin out there. You have to go get this in. You have to go get this. It can be any type of things. It can be epic fantasy level. It can be far in the future kind of stuff. They find alien things. It could be even stuff like old Earth stuff where you find San Francisco, right? They find a piece of the Golden Gate Bridge or something like that, and they don't know what the hell it is. So I think it provides, on top of the really cool setting, right? Because I love the gunslinger. I love, like, old Western movies. Like, I'd love to be able to play in that setting. I love the idea of the danger at early levels, besides, like, almost dying on stairs and stuff. Like, I say I love it, and then we play Cthulhu, and I almost die. And I questioned that for a little while, but I like that. It's the only time you really get that that really intense feeling, like you might lose it all right there and stuff like that. So I think that, paired that with the idea that once I step out there, like, I can, as a DM, I can put my players in any kind of situation out there, right? It's a blank slate. And it's just a really cool place. Like, I don't know. I think it was a really, cool idea. I want to do the play test now. I think I'm going to be the engineer, but I'm not sure. I have to fight Tony for it.
I'm thinking of, and speaking of that, like, just the level of danger and the tension that this different setting builds with everybody rolling out with revolvers and pistols and everything. I'm thinking so the Monster Wrangler, Matt, for everybody who's listened to some of the episodes, he has started his first long-running campaign of Tyranny of Dragons. He's actually taken us through. We had our first session. It was awesome. And he dropped, there's six people in the party. He dropped four of us without even attempting to. Like, he didn't even try. It just happened, because that's what happens at first level. And it was awesome. It was absolutely phenomenal because of that. So with Boomtown, I think some of that same excitement can be. And I will just say, overall, when Chris first brought the idea of, hey guys, what if we did like a little couple episode series of like what would it look like to build out a thing? It's now turned into this whole world, this whole thing that we have. That is, it just continues to grow. So this is, like I said, the end, but it's really not. This is just the really solid foundation that we're going to then go forward from here. And then as we play it, it's going to build out and find where all the bugs might be. But that is going to be it for me. And while we've been talking about Boomtown for many, many episodes, obviously the main mission of our podcast here is we are DMs with problems. We love to help DMs with problems. So if you have problems, questions, issues, anything at your table, reach out to us. Reach out to us at 3wisedms.com and put it in the What's Your Problem field. Get us by email at 3wisedms@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Facebook and Instagram. And let us know if there's something that you like us to discuss on the cast here. We take all comers. With the 2D8 and 2D10, my favorite was the shotgun, though, because it was like 2D8, but it was like a 15-foot spread. Like, I thought that was fun. It was like a sawed-off, right? Yeah, that would just blow away like three guys in one shot. Just,
take out three of the members of your party.
Oh, you're just all standing in a row. Boom. For those, I mean, have some firearm dice and go to our affiliate link at fanrolldice.com/REF/2871 and put in the code 3WiseDMs 10. That's the number 3WiseDMs, the number 10. You get 10% off your order, and order some very specific dice that you'll use for your revolver and your rifle and your shotgun and maybe your las cannon when you get that too. Maybe chain swords will also make an appearance, but... That's going to be it for us this week. And as we do each episode, we're going to let our dear old erstwhile leader take us out.
And thank you to all of you listening from home. We really appreciate it. If you liked what you've been listening to, please smash that 5-star rating button. Let us know. Leave a good review. Tell your friends. That really helps us grow. If you'd like to hear us answer any question you have, send it to us at 3wisedms@gmail.com or go to our website, 3wisedms.com, and enter it in the What's Your Problem field. Or you can talk to us on Facebook, Instagram. We're active on all those platforms, so feel free to drop by, send us a question, and we'll see if we can make it on the show. That's it for this week. We'll see you next time, 3 Wise Beings.